We have another installment today in our Sense of Place Portland series. Today, talking with musicians and others involved with the burgeoning music scene there. Music Millennium is one of the preeminent record stores in Portland, a city rich with record stores. Owner Terry Currier will provide a history of the music scene in Portland, as well as talk about the state of the record store business. He's uniquely qualified to do so with his decades-long history in the business and as the founder of the Coalition of Independent Music Stores. To start off, I asked Terry how he first got involved.
The store's been around since 1969. I came here in 84.
And tell me what it was like in the beginning and what changes happened as you've been here.
Well, I became a big customer of the store in 72. I've been working in record retail in town since 72. And Music Millennium was one of these stores. It was the first of the underground record stores in town. And it actually inspired a lot of other people to start record stores. In the 70s in Portland, this was one of the, probably had more record stores per capita than any major city in the United States. And everybody was really competitive with each other. So there was these great selections of stuff. I mean, people curated great record stores in this town.
Can you track Portland's musical tastes? Can you see what people buy?
Yeah. I mean, I do all the buying for the store, so I do see what people buy. It's all over the map. Portland's got a really good music scene to that. And I think it goes back to the beginning years of Millennium, because in the very beginning of Millennium, the owner thought that American vinyl was inferior to imported vinyl, which was true. So he went to Europe and he set up all these accounts and started importing vinyl. Through the process of setting up all those accounts, he found all these bands that were just a little out there on the edge, and he started importing them here. The clientele of the store was exposed to a lot of different kinds of music. I think that just kind of just set the tone for the whole city from that point forward.
Talk a little bit about the, go back and kind of bring us up to date on the history of Portland music. I think people, you know, some people start with the Shins, you know, and obviously it goes way back.
Yeah, well, Portland rock goes all the way back to the beginning of rock on a national basis. We had a really great soul guy in town here named Earl Thomas, who went out on the Chitlin circuit, as they called it. He opened up a lot of days for Otis Redding in the early 60s. In the 60s, we had the Kingsmen, who kind of had our national anthem, as we call it here, Louie Louie. We had Paul Revere and the Raiders in this town, who also recorded Louie Louie, but a day or two after the Kingsmen. The Kingsmen had the hit, and Paul Revere and the Raiders had the career. As we went into the 70s, a lot of things happened in Portland here. One thing that really changed in this town in the early 70s, before then, bands couldn't play in clubs, in taverns and bars, because the Oregon Liquor Control banned it, that you had to be sitting down and there could only be a singular player playing in a bar. Once that law was changed, this town was on fire. Every club in town that was a bar or a tavern put in live music, and live music was happening 7 days a week in this town. The musicians in this town actually made more money in the 70s than they do today because they were able to get so many gigs. Some bands played four or five nights a week back then. You know, these days, a lot of clubs only want you to play once a week or once a month because they want to make sure that your audience is going to come back the next time and fill their club up. In the later 70s, you know, when the punk movement started happening, Portland had a big punk movement. The Wipers, the Neo Boys, Napalm Beach, the Rats, Poison Idea was really, really strong. It's not the truth I see, it's just a mockery. Don't need to waste my time, you know I really. as you got into the 80s, we started seeing a lot of national attention to our town for the music that we had. Bands like the Dan Reed Network got signed to Mercury. Robert Cray, the great blues guitar player, was out of here. He got signed. New Shoes, they had a national hit on Atlantic worldwide with a song called I Can't Wait. As we got into the later 80s, indie rock scene really happened in this town in a big, big way. We had bands like the Crazy Eights, the Dharma Bums. Local labels started springing up too at the same time. There was a label called Tim Kerr Records, which actually put out the first Everclear record.
Turn away from the pain you don't want. Turning down to avoid them when they call. Strange words I heard a long, long time ago. I wish I could go back to a summertime I knew more than 20 years ago. Lay between the sheets, lie underneath the maple tree.
As you went into the 90s, there was a lot of bands like Heat Miser, Elliott Smith's first band, Hazel, Pond, and Sprinkler all got deals with Sub Pop Records in Seattle. And they kind of paved that way for the whole indie rock scene that kind of really exploded in this last decade.
And I am a writer, writer of fictions. I am the heart that you call home. And I've written pages upon pages, trying to rid you from my bones. My bones.
Portland's kind of been on the musical map worldwide as one of those great towns like Austin and New Orleans, New York and LA, where the music scene is very, very good.
So this is the front line of the music business, bricks and mortar edition. How is it going? How hard is it to keep this place going?
Well, since digital downloading started happening in the beginning of the last decade, it's been a lot more difficult to keep the store open. We've had to make a lot of changes this last decade in order to do it. We used to be primarily a new record store, and the profit margins on new, as business started dropping, weren't enough to be a sound business. I mean, we pretty much lost money for the last 10 years, every single year. We started putting other things in there. We did focus a lot more on used records. I mean, a lot of record stores were forced around the country to get into other areas of merchandise. A lot of people got into lifestyle merchandise, bringing in a lot more t-shirts, maybe in items in their store that had nothing to do with music, you know. Different things that had a higher profitability on them. I started this organization called the Coalition of Independent Music Stores in 1995. And at that time, I was seeing a certain amount of record stores having problem because of the big box retailers getting into the music business and using music as a loss leader to get people in their store. And people in the independent record stores couldn't compete with the price that these people were putting out to their customers. In many cases, these stores were selling it for $2 or $3 cheaper than what we were buying it for, which, you know, we can't take a loss like that to bring people in the store. I mean, you have to make a profit.
So what's financially kept this place afloat? What element of your business?
We have focused a lot more on used, which has been great that vinyl has come back because, I mean, so much of the vinyl business is used business. We still sell a lot of used CDs, a lot of used DVDs. We've had to add some of those lifestyle items in the store. We haven't went to the extent many stores have had to do. I mean, there's record stores out there that maybe 50% of their store is lifestyle merchandise. Well, my philosophy was, if I have to take some music out of my store to put lifestyle up, I'm not going to do it. So any of the lifestyle stuff that has went into our store has worked around what we have in the store.
So when you say the focus turned away from new music, like having a stack of, you know, a new Pearl Jam album selling like hotcakes, what this has become in some ways, it seems, is it is a collector's market now.
Well, some people say existing record stores may be close to being living museums, you know, that are still operating and still doing it, but there's only a certain amount of the country that really care about it. You know, when I was growing up, music was at the top of the list of things that mattered in somebody's life, as in the youth culture. Today, there's not as many people that are into it. It has moved down the list. There's a certain amount of people where it is at the top of the list, but they have so many different things to pick from these days. When I was growing up, you had like 11 TV stations at the most in your marketplace, and you had the radio, and you had the movies. Those were your major forms of entertainment. As you got into the 70s, you got video game parlors popped up all over the place, and then you got home video games. Then cable TV started sprouting up. Then computers came about, and there's so many things to divert people's attention that music can't be at the top of a lot of people's list. For me, music is still at the top of my list.
Kerry Currier in our Sense of Place Portland series. If you want to find out more about his record stores and others, there's a wonderful interactive map up at our website. In fact, there's a whole lot more you can look at about Portland at npr.org, Sense of Place. That's npr.org, Sense of Place. There's also a free download of World Cafe acts from Portland as well.